Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 602, Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Because none of us are going to theaters to see any movies.
I was so glad that they actually... I feel bad that this movie got released on VOD. I feel bad for them because I feel like if this... Especially, it was originally intended to come out in August.
Yeah.
Which is typically kind of a slow period for films, and I think if this movie had come out in August as planned in a regular world, it would have been the highest grossing film of the month of the franchise. And even adjusted for inflation, I think this movie would have ended up making a ton of money.
Yep, I completely agree.
On the flip side, though, this movie is exactly what we need right now.
Yep,
it's a heartfelt, feel good movie where you can have a fun time, not worry about things. People can watch it at home where studios aren't forcing you to go to the theater to see their new movies. So by them doing that, I see a lot of people online saying, thank you for allowing me to watch this safely at home. And this is the movie I need. And I loved it. It got really good critical reviews. So you just never know what could have happened. And while it could have been a huge success in normal times, you know, maybe it doing this earned it some goodwill and ended up even better in the end. This is a dual release. Should we introduce ourselves first, I guess?
Oh, sure. I guess let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your shows from. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. Like the page, join the group, and of course, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out. So
we have a review.
Oh.
Oh, we do?
We do.
Do they, what they mean?
No, it's it's a good five-star one.
Oh, right.
I'm not going to try to pronounce this username because it looks like they just like fell on the keyboard.
Gotcha.
Okay. That's about what it looks like. Five stars. These guys do a great job of discussing the movies and in an entertaining and insightful manner. They stray off topic, see previous episode, in a fun and enjoyable manner at times. I have really enjoyed going back and listening to the Marvel movie discussions for the great way they expand on the movie's backstories. Highly recommended.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right.
There we go.
This movie is a dual release, simultaneous theatrical and video on demand. So for people that want to return to the theaters or for people that have drive-in theaters, this movie is playing in any of those theatrical formats. But for people that aren't ready to go back to the theaters, it is available to rent or to purchase on VOD. So for $19.99, you can rent it on iTunes, Vudu, Fandango Now, all that stuff. Or for $24.99, you can just go ahead and own it. So I can't imagine a lot of people not paying the $5 and just rolling the dice and saying for $5.
I was kind of hoping for a bundle, but whatever.
I mean, there will be eventually.
Right.
There's a great bundle.
on Apple, I think, had a
bundle. Oh, for all
Vudu?
Three of them?
Vudu had it. Fandango had it. Apple
had
it
prior.
They all had it.
Ah,
well, they all have it right now. $35 for all of them.
Oh, I couldn't find it. I found was, oh, well.
No, it's out
now
there.
Now I own Bill and Ted Face the Music, but that's
yeah, fine. Which sucks because the other two are 15 apiece to own.
Well, so I've got those on that Shout Factory disc, so it's not the end of the world.
Sit tight. They put those movies on sale for $5 all the time.
But the way they've got it marketed is they want you to buy the bundle and they want you to buy the new one. So
sure.
It's either 15 for one and two separately or 35 for the $25 new movie and the other two, so it puts them at five apiece, so they're like basically nudging you in the direction of buying that.
That's an interesting, we talk about like where theaters are going to go when they bundle it like that. How do you determine the profit margin on that movie, right? Like if people are buying the bundle pack at $35 and you get one, two, and three, how do you determine how
they
much
discount the others to five? I mean, that movie's still a $25 purchase. So I think what they're doing is they're sweetening the pot. They're saying, if you buy this new one, you know, we'll give you a discount from 15 down to five on the others by keeping the individual price high. It's just marketing. They're 15 a piece so that you buy the bundle for five. If they were five a piece, some people would go, oh, I'll just watch the originals for $10 and I'll wait for the other one to be $7. Right. So it's all marketing and smoke and mirrors, but it's that simultaneous release, which is great. So it gave people the option, which I really love because in my mind, I know the theater is a fun experience. We all used to go all the time. I'm not going to go too deep into it. It's fun to go to the theater, but in my mind, no movie really, rarely does a movie need to be seen in the theater. Let me phrase it that way. You know, I first watched Ben-Hur and The Ten Commandments and Lawrence of Arabia and Casablanca and Schindler's List and all these great films. I saw them at home for the first time, and guess what? They were still great movies. So I think it's kind of BS when people say you have to see it on the big screen, because how many people watched all those old classic movies in the theater? They weren't born most of the time, and they're still great movies. So I think it's crappy to force people during global pandemic into the theater to see a movie. And I think this, again, earned them a lot of goodwill that they were like, you want to go to the theater? Fine. Bill and Ted 3. You want to see it at home? Rent it or buy it. And it was really cool. They made $400,000 on Friday in the theaters. And so it's estimated, it's, you know, not a huge take, but still it's kind of free discovered money since it was going to be on VOD anyway. They think it's going to make about $1 million in theaters.
That's not bad.
But it's at the top of every VOD chart.
Absolutely.
If you have Apple TV, I was watching a lot of stuff on Apple TV over the weekend. Like the scrolling featured image where they show different movies usually is like Ted, scroll, Bill, scroll, Death. I mean, they are promoting this movie. They partnered with Fandango Now for promotions. Vudu has graphics and things. So this is a big streaming movie, and it's going to make a ton that way. So it's interesting to see how the simultaneous release works, because a lot of movies are either like, we're going straight to VOD, or we're going to be in theaters only, as some that are coming out now, you know, in the next week.
Well, what did we just see about Mulan? Didn't they just change their thing?
No, they didn't change anything.
So so it's a delayed thing.
So Mulan was always going to come to Disney Plus for free eventually.
Right.
Mulan is coming out next weekend this weekend when you're listening on the Disney Plus Premier Access. And so for $30, you can see it now and you can watch as many times as you want. So it's kind of like owning it, but you do have to keep an active Disney Plus subscription. But eventually, which
it's the end of September, right?
December.
No. December. Okay.
It was leaked by the UK Disney Plus app. And it went away very quickly after, so they must have been testing their programming or whatever. So in the
terrible thing to test it on.
In the UK, it said you can buy it on Premier Access for $29.99 and own it before everyone else in December. And they took that down. It said £29.99. So it's not official. It's not been confirmed. But if that leak is to be believed, and if it is, and the UK, remember, launched Disney Plus way after US. So they're not on the same page all the time. Now, I'm not saying they won't be caught up by then, but just for what it's worth, the UK Disney Plus had a quick leak that it was going to be free for everyone in December. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But that was always the plan. Like, I saw some people posting like, yeah, that makes more sense. It was kind of a ripoff at 30. I'm glad they're giving it. And it's like, no, it was always the plan to be early access, but now
no, I knew the access, but I thought that they were trying to pull some with all the bad publicity that came along with it. They're like, yeah, never mind, it's thing, but other services it's not.
Nothing changed. It only there was that UK leak. That's the only news.
And they're still going to sell a lot of this on physical media because there's so many diehards that have every Disney movie on physical media that they're going to want to keep that collection going.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah. Hopefully. I mean, hopefully they keep it up. I mean, there's been rumors where, internal rumors where they were going to stop doing 4K, which is what collectors want, because collectors always want the best media out there. So the diehards are the ones that want 4K. Yeah. General people would buy Blu-ray, but then again, general audiences are just streaming Disney Plus. So I think it's really muddied right now. And so for collectors,
it's just a weird time.
It is. I hope they keep doing the 4K, because again, that's what the collectors want. And it's going to suck if the diehard collectors have to go back to regular Blu-ray.
What if they do kind of like what Warner does?
Print them
and print them. Like, yeah. I feel like why would you not do that? Maybe you stop sending like 4K or whatever to stores. And if the collectors, I mean, then you're not losing money.
Yeah, pre-order the 4K or something, and then they can ship them all.
Or you go to Disney Plus, whatever, and then you're like, hey, can I get this on 4K? They're like, sure, it'll be out in 2 weeks.
So that's the world we're living in. At the time of this recording, New Mutants is estimated to make between $8 and $10 million, which, I mean, for a movie that was delayed 3 years.
I think if it had came out in a regular ecosystem with competition at the box office, I think there's a good chance it still would have made between $8 and $10 million.
Yeah, or less. I mean, people are desperate for movies, and this is, aside from the Russell Crowe Unhinged movie, which it also did about $8 million last weekend when it came out. This is one of the few new movies in theaters. It has the Marvel logo behind it. It's the last Fox Marvel movie. People want to get back to the theaters. Like, the people that do need something to watch. And so
what I find interesting though is the Bill and Ted box office versus the New Mutant box office. And I feel like New Mutant, since it wasn't available on VOD, people only had, the only option was to go to the theater. I think it's very telling that Bill and Ted, what its box office returns were when people were given the option of staying home to watch it. Because I just know, for my own anecdotal purposes, I see way more people talking about Bill and Ted on my Facebook and Twitter feeds than I see talking about New Mutants.
Oh, 100%. I think the number of people that watch Bill and Ted, when you're talking about number-wise, far surpasses New Mutants. Because you're talking about still the $10, $12, $15 tickets. It's an IMAX. It's expensive around the country. So you're talking New Mutants making $8 million only in theaters, and you're talking about Bill and Ted making between $800,000 to $1.2 million is the range they're giving in theaters, but it's at the top of every VOD chart. And remember what Trolls in the first week made almost $100 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, not saying this will do that because necessarily, but we'd see the potential of VOD is that in a week Trolls made $100 million. Everyone's talking about VOD and it's topping all the charts. So Bill and Ted could in theory make $50 million on VOD in its first week. And so you're talking about, wow, yeah, New Mutants is $8 million compared to $1 million. But then if Bill and Ted makes 50, that blows New Mutants out of the water, right? So I think what Tom said is very telling, that when given the choice during a global pandemic, people are going to stay home. And when people are forced to go to the theaters because that's their only option, sure, some will turn up, but you're not going to do the numbers. And it's very telling. I'm excited to talk about, and again, I don't want anyone to fail. Please don't take this as me wanting movies, theaters, the studios to fail. No one wants that. You just have to be smart during a pandemic. No movie is worth risking your health. No movie. It's a movie, right? We love movies. That's what we do, but it's a movie. But it will be very telling next weekend, because that's when Tenet opens. And this has been the big, you know, coming only in theaters, coming to theaters. WB is standing their ground and only doing theaters, and it's the big movie. And we'll see. Will people turn up? I think it's going to have a very lackluster U.S. box office.
It's not getting the best reviews either.
Well, and some of that is muddy too, because of people being mad at WB for their release strategy.
Sure.
Meaning Bill and Ted earned good vibes from what they did, right? Like, you can stay at home and watch this and be safe. Tenet is like, you cannot stay at home and be safe. You have to see this in the theater. And so it did the opposite of goodwill, where I think Bill and Ted is boosted by their goodwill. Tenet has that taken away.
The opposite.
And so we'll see next weekend. But the big thing is, Tenet is the hugest theatrical summer movie that didn't get released in the summer, but that's coming to theaters, like the first big one to open up. So what do you guys think it will make? I'm thinking it maybe makes like $25 million U.S. this next weekend.
Yeah, I was thinking like 20. Like if a New Mutants can make, you know, 8, and then this is a way bigger movie. Because everybody knew New Mutants was just going to be a turd, and that they went anyway.
Yeah.
And so, but I, so I just, I feel like around 20, which is still not what a movie like this needs to open.
I was thinking Tenet in a non-pandemic opens to around $100 million.
Yeah.
For sure. If not more.
Yeah.
Like the hype behind that movie.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been that much hype behind a Christopher Nolan movie in a long time.
So Bill and Ted Face the Music. $25 million budget, right? $5 million more than the 1991 previous movie.
Correct.
Yes, correct. This is, it's such an interesting mix of excellent adventure and bogus journey.
Yeah.
Like there are elements of both movies. They took all the good elements of both movies and just mushed them together.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was an absolute delight.
Yep.
I did.
There's nothing. I will say it took me a little bit, probably about, I don't know, a fourth of the movie to get used to this version of Keanu again.
Yeah.
That he, I mean, even he, I felt like even he was having a hard time like getting back into it. Right. Like,
I mean, he's become John Wick.
He has become, or not even that, but he's just, he has this persona. You know, like the whole thing with Colbert, like when Colbert is like, what do you think happens when we die? And he rips off, he's just like, the people that love us will miss us. And you're just like, whoa, wow. All right. But like the guy from, he's not the same character. He's not the same style actor from Speed or Point Break. He's just a very mellow dude.
He spent a lot of time trying to, you know, a lot of his early roles were variations on this character.
Yeah, that's very true.
And he spent a lot of time trying to break away from that. So for him to go return to it is very gracious. Because you know that he's not in a position where he has to do it. Like sometimes actors do that.
He doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, sometimes actors do that because they don't have a choice. And he absolutely had a choice. And he chose to do this. And you can tell he's having an absolute blast.
Absolutely. If he can stop shaving, just grow the beard back. I don't like the clean face Keanu Reeves anymore. It weirds me out.
I didn't
either. No, he needs a beard, 100%.
Maybe not smile so much, because that creeps me out just as much. But they're both of these guys, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves, come back into this movie, and it's like they never left.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like they never miss a beat.
You feel like they are the same characters 30 years older.
Yeah.
And they don't even look 30 years older. I'll say that, too. There are moments when Alex Winter looks a little aged, but overall, I think they look the same. They sound the same. They bring back Missy, which is just the best callback joke of the entire movie.
Well, here's the deal. This movie's 29 years after Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and people age, but those movies...
Sure. I'm sorry. I don't
mean
that.
But those movies are in such a time capsule that, see, Keanu's evolved. We've seen him year after year after year, role after role, evolve, get a little older, grow a beard, change his hair, right? But when we think Bill and Ted, we always think of 89 or 91 Bill and Ted and those two actors, right? So when you take a jump like this, it's not that they look bad for being 29 years older. It's just that they're not, we didn't see Bill and Ted every year since 1991. We think of 1991 Bogus Journey and then we go to the third one. And so because of that jump, it's just a little jarring because we haven't seen those characters in so long. And that's the biggest thing.
It is funny that Keanu's hairstyle has devolved back, because that's what his hairstyle is now. His hairstyle is Bill's hairstyle.
Right.
Or Ted's hairstyle from in 89 and 91. It's the same thing.
He would look really weird with Bill's hairstyle.
Very
curly blonde hair.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, Alex Winter still has like the same hair.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, like sometimes you see these guys and they don't age well.
Even
Ted's dad looks pretty good.
Yeah.
That guy's got to be pushing 80.
Has to be.
Yeah, but he still looked good. And I just, you know, I was talking about this movie on the radio and I was saying a lot of times when you go see comedians doing roles late in their careers or comedic roles, it can be kind of sad. And I compared it to Have Rocket Will Travel, the Three Stooges movie from 59.
Yeah.
You know, but to put it in perspective, like, and, you know, when that movie came out, Larry Fine would have been about 5 years older than Keanu Reeves is right now.
That's crazy.
But how much older and sadder do the Three Stooges look in that movie than the Three Stooges when they're churning out the two reelers that you think of, you know?
Right, that's just right. Actors in general, though. People with health, medical stuff, people taking care of themselves. Actors today look, I mean, we talked about it with Lee Marvin with the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm not trying to rip on anyone. In general, actors today, when you talk about these six people in their 60s and their 70s still out there acting, like, think about Anthony Hopkins and how old he is, and he still can be a leading man, and he still has
Patrick
that gravitas.
Stewart.
Patrick Stewart's still out there doing that.
Helen Mirren.
Helen, yeah,
you
right?
Just use people work to stay younger longer.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was watching the movie a while back, Marty, the Ernest Borgnine movie, and there's a scene where his mother and aunt are talking, and I think the aunt's like moving in with the mom or something because her husband died, and she's like this old widow, and she's going, and we ran the math, and she was like 53, and right. but that was like what was considered old and at death's door, and society had no use for you anymore. And now it's like people are still having kids at 53.
Well, right, and then I mean, think about like you mentioned earlier, Joe, Helen Mirren, how old is she? And she still looks great.
No, she looks amazing.
Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't say, oh, she's the old widow character at 53, right?
Right. I mean,
it's just a different time. But anyway, so this movie, like, they're older, they have their families, they have their kids. The retcon we were talking about last episode. So if you watched Bogus Journey and you listen to the episode, at the very end they time travel and come back, and they already have their two kids, Bill and Ted. I think clearly it is clear that they were meant to be two little boys named Bill and Ted. Like, of course they had kids, and they did do the name switch, so like Ted had little Bill and Bill had little Ted, which is a which is a cute homage and a really nice way to sum up their friendship. They love each other so much, and we see that in this movie. We even see it back in the second movie, like when they're proposing to the princesses. And
sure.
We didn't get through a lot of the plot of the second movie, unfortunately. But do you see these really sweet moments where they're doing kind of the same thing and they're in sync? It's because these two are the best of friends and they love one another.
Right.
And they in this movie, they really embrace that love, where in the, I guess, the end of the first one, as you were saying, they do a stupid derogatory remark instead of embracing it because these two
it's like in the middle, like it's in the but
they embrace it in this one, and they always did love each other, but the fact is they didn't show it and embrace it as much, where this one it's clear how much they care about one another. And so I think that's a beautiful testament to their friendship and the love they have, is the naming of the kids after one another. It's just in this one, they retcon it to where Bill and Ted are nicknames for their, like,
the daughters,
Theodore or whatever.
Theodora.
Theodora. So they named them after each other, but they're female variations of their best friend's name. So that was the retcon. And I think it's clear in the last one that, like, at least one of the little kids is a boy. And I don't think they ever intentioned to have daughters in Bogus Journey, right? Like, it's not like they were back in 91, like, we're going to have little Bill and Ted, but they're actually girls. And it's, you know, that was not a thought.
No. That was a nice little way to make them dads of girls, which I guess Tom has a stepdaughter. It's a completely different dynamic. Like, it's a very different dynamic with two girls. I feel like it adds to their characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that they're these two dads who, and here's the, Samara Weaving is fantastic. I think she's a fantastic actress. She is overshadowed by the gal that is
Bridget
Lundy Payne,
who is doing a
spot on
Keanu Reeves impression.
People might recognize her from the show Atypical on Netflix.
Oh.
It's about a family. They have a boy who is on the autism spectrum, and she plays the sister.
Okay.
It's a really good show. It's funny, but not inappropriately so, and it's highly recommended.
Yeah, Samara Weaving is just Samara Weaving. Like, she's not doing...
But you can't even say just Samara Weaving. Samara Weaving is... she's another one of those that is a ray of joy. She captures the spirit and... you know, she has this star power about her, right?
Yes.
So Ready or Not, she's so good in that. As soon as we saw Ready or Not, we knew Samara Weaving would be a star.
The Babysitter.
She's been in all sorts of other stuff.
Wolf of Wall Street. My Name is Earl.
She was in Wolf of Wall Street?
No, that's Margot Robbie and Jamie Presley because they all look alike.
And she is Australian.
Is she really?
Margot Robbie's Australian, right?
I have no idea.
I thought she was Australian.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Okay, I thought she was. But anyway, Samara Weaving's Australian. So the thing is, she's a delightful actor, and we love her and the roles that we've seen her in. So it's not a knock on her, but you're right. Bridget Lundy Payne is doing this Ted impression where it is just
spot. I felt like sometimes she was a little too animated,
a little caricaturish.
She was always moving. And so where Ted had moments of that, but she was almost constantly doing it, which was a little distracting.
She puts it on a little thick, but she is doing a really good, her timing,
even the hair flips,
her cadence.
Yeah.
She really studied Keanu Reeves in these movies, you can tell, and does a great recreation. Samara Weaving, as great as she is always and as delightful as she is in this role, I didn't see Bill in her. I just didn't see it.
I would agree. Every once in a while, she would kind of slip into a little bit of that surfer dude cadence, but not like the other one did.
Yeah.
And so she was great in Ready or Not, so not trying to bag on her at all.
And
but
she's fine in this, too. I mean, that's what I mean. She's enjoyable in this, but she didn't have that.
Well, you got to kind of wonder, there's some connections there for why she might have ended up in the Keanu Reeves movie, right? So
why?
Her dad was Agent Smith.
Who's
she's
dad?
Hugo Weaving's daughter?
That's Hugo Weaving's daughter?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
Well, now it's blowing people's minds. Yeah.
Wow.
well, okay. uncle. That's her uncle.
Okay.
That's her uncle?
That's her uncle.
But still.
Oh, okay. Sorry, but still a relative.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
crazy. There you go. That's interesting. So, yeah, the casting is great, and I agree with Joe. I think giving them daughters was really nice. It's just too obvious to have sons named Bill and Ted. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
We've seen kids of characters before. We've seen them emulate their dads and be just like them. It's a
Here's
different...
the other nice thing about the daughters or in this movie is that they totally love their dads. You know, they never go down this road. Most movies would have this moment of conflict where kids are mad and then there's a falling out and then they have to reunite in some capacity to save the world. And they never do that. They absolutely. And I always laughed every time they would say dads, plural.
Dads, yeah.
that was great. But. Yeah, I really like the fact that they didn't have any of the plot revolve around the kids being mad at their parents and learning a valuable lesson about family love. And it was
They love their dads from the get. They admire. They looked up to their dads.
Yeah.
And that never wavered.
Well, that goes back to what we were saying about the first two movies.
Right.
Bill and Ted never infight. They never have a falling out. They never do that thing. It's become such a trope in a buddy movie where one of them screws the other one over and they have to, walk, alone with their thoughts and remember the good times. They never do that in any of the movies, and that includes the third one. It's not mean-spirited. They don't hate each other. They don't have a conflict. This movie is such a feel-good movie with the heart and the love and family and friendship. It just never goes down that trope, and that's what makes it such a delight, and especially in these times, it's a movie you can watch and feel good and laugh and not take too seriously. I really like that dynamic, and I think that all of them, all four of them, of the Bill and Ted pairs, they do a great job, and what I really like is that when I saw the poster and I first saw this movie was going to be about their daughters, I thought it was going to be a hand off the baton type
me
situation.
Me too. I was going to say the same thing, that I thought that it was that we were going to get less Bill and Ted they can try and set the girls up for their own movie. And I don't know, maybe they'll go down that road, but I really didn't feel like they were trying to do that.
Yeah. It wasn't a pass the torch thing. That's what was so great. I thought, Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter are going to, film for a cup of coffee and then it's the girls' adventure. But what they end up doing is they give them each their own adventure, and they both pairs have purpose. They both are very mm-hmm. important to the story, and neither takes away from the other. And especially with as much nostalgia and fan service, we talk about how nostalgic people are, and that's what got this movie made. If you were to bait and switch them and give them Bill and Ted cameos in the movies about their daughters, people would be pissed. I mean, that's just how it is.
And I will also say, I never had a moment where when they cut to the daughter storyline, I was just like, I was like, no, this makes sense where we're going. I mean, as much as a Bill and Ted movie can make sense, but like, this makes sense where we're headed right now. And I didn't feel like I was getting cheated out of Bill and Ted time when they cut to the daughters. I think that was handled masterfully.
Yeah. And like Joe said, I mean, this movie takes the best of both worlds. You have really the Grim Reaper element from the second movie, and you get back the time travel element, and both of the pairs go in separate directions. So the girls, once they see that their dads are in danger, they start going back in time and trying to collect famous musicians to create this insane historical supergroup. And
so
Bill
Ted, do you think so? I took it as they were, so they started with Hendrix, and then they went to the person that inspired Hendrix,
mm-hmm. right.
and they went to the person that inspired Louis Armstrong.
Correct. Right. That's how I took it too.
Like, and then they went to the, so like, they were just following this timeline of inspirational artists.
Right.
So like, if it were me, right, like I would want Hendrix and Eddie Van Halen and John Bonham, and like, if I'm going to create this super group of guys from the best of the best, that's what I would do. But they're doing, like, they're taking the idea of the history report and putting that to the music, right? So they're starting at point A with Hendrix and then just, like, working their way down through history. So, like I said, they're combining, like, the story of the history report with the wackiness of going to hell.
Yeah, I mean, I think that going back in time is the history report. I don't think that Billy the Kid was inspired by Socrates. I don't think it doesn't follow like that. But they're taking the best elements. So, like I was saying, the girls are going back in time further and further and further, giving you the history or do the time travel element from the first one. But then at the same time, Bill and Ted are going further into the future, and we get to see different versions of the future and different versions of Bill and Ted. So they go on two very different and very entertaining journeys, and I thought they were both equally fun to watch, where, like Tom said, you didn't go, oh, cut back to Bill and Ted, or you didn't also go, oh, go back to the daughters. Like, they both had their own fun things to do, which was really cool, and we got to see Bill and Ted do what we enjoyed in the previous two movies, which is act opposite themselves, which is always fun. And they go crazy with their future selves, like, designs in this one.
And it's fun, like, you sometimes, when you don't, you know, we've seen it a million times when they bring two actors who've worked together back together after being apart for so long. Sometimes that just doesn't work. Like, the chemistry is not there anymore. And that is not the case.
No,
with Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves. Like, I wonder if they're still buddies.
They are. That's why. They're,
oh,
they've,
okay.
They've
that
kept
makes
in
sense.
Touch. They're lifelong friends. So
then that makes more sense because they didn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
Like, they go right back to being Bill and Ted, to musicians.
Yeah. So let's talk about what sets them on their course, is that basically the future's collapsing. They didn't save the world.
Well, they haven't yet.
They're not even successful. Like, right, they had a moment where they were very popular, and then it's just been diminishing returns ever since.
Yes. Like most 80s bands that you don't remember anymore.
They follow the bogus journey, the newspapers and stuff at the end. They carry that forward, but they're like, you know, actually, instead of like the will they break up, oh no, it was a hoax thing at the end of Bogus Journey, this one's like they actually did split up and they did solo records and failed their solo records. The Grim Reaper split off and tried to do his own thing. And
they sue the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, it's like, it's so yeah, they're struggling to find their way.
I will say, like, they don't negate those papers. If you watch there's like a whole storyline told through those newspapers at the end of Bogus Journey, and you get things like Grim Reaper making his own solo album. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it really, it keeps that in canon, best I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. It's just they go forward further. Like, even after that, it's like they really, their band did have trouble. They weren't the band that they thought, you thought they were going to be this huge successful band based on those papers, but really they start struggling and they're trying to find their sound. And in this whole 29 years, they've been trying to create the song that saves the world, and they don't do it based on this future. And so now we have to figure out how to... They have to figure out how to do it, or else the entire world's going to collapse, basically.
I knew that this movie was going to be perfect just from the opening scene, right? Like, the opening scene is Bill and Ted playing at a wedding. You don't know whose wedding it is right away, but you, it's just, a, you know, they're like, oh, man, the Wild Stallions are now wedding singers. and then you realize it's Ted's little brother from the first movie, played by Beck Bennett from SNL. Who is now marrying Missy.
Which is a hilarious way to carry on the
joke. Just to recap is that Missy from part one married Bill's dad. Missy in part two married Ted's dad. And now Missy in part three is marrying Ted's brother.
Which is a great callback to the joke. The second one where he says, maybe you'll marry her and you can be your own stepdad or whatever.
Right.
Well,
and I do love that Ted gives the breakdown of like, who everybody is to each other now. So he's like, I guess you're your own uncle and your own son. Like, it just, it's a hilarious breakdown. And they brought back the original Missy. Like, it's the same Missy from all three movies, the first two at least. They are trying to write this song that's going to get them back in the world of music. And they're going very experimental. And like, Ted's got this weird, like vibration instrument, and Bill is doing like a death metal guttural, like
throat singing.
Yeah. And it's just not working. And Ted's dad shows back up and like pulls the plug, and gives them a bunch of guff. We have two new princesses. One is the gal from Glee. The art teacher, right, from Glee.
Yes, yeah, she is. Yes, she is.
And I'm just like, you couldn't just hire two British actresses.
Yeah, I thought...
like, you've got to have them put on some not very good British accents.
Yeah.
But whatever. And they all still love each other, but there is some strife, right? Like, Bill and Ted have kind of dedicated their lives to being musicians, and it's not working. And the wives take them to couples therapy.
This is great.
And it's a hilarious scene. And I wish I knew the name of that actress, but she was in Bridget.
Brittany Runs a Marathon.
Brittany Runs a Marathon.
Yeah. Which, if you haven't seen, is such a good movie. Such a good movie.
Yeah.
This actress was also in, 22 Jump Street, right?
You're right.
She's great. She pops up in movies and is like the highlight all the time.
Wasn't she the sister in Marriage Story?
She was the sister in Marriage Story.
And
you're
she's the aunt in Goosebumps 2, the Jack Black one.
I didn't see the Goosebumps. I didn't see the second one.
I saw the first one.
Oh, didn't we review it?
No.
What?
We didn't review the second Goosebumps?
I think it came out against something else.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. But yeah, she's really great. But
I love where they're both like, say what you're feeling right now. And Ted just kind of goes to his wife, we love you.
Yeah.
And she's just like, okay, stop right there. Change the we to I. And he's just like, Bill and I love you.
Yeah.
And she's like, I think I see the problem.
It's a great concept because as much as we talk about how much the two friends love each other and care about each other and they're the best of friends, but also the princesses wanted to marry each of them individually, and what they got was they married both of them together. And so it's a great scene that really shows you that it shows you the love that they all have for one another. And they're not mean-spirited. It's not in
a bad way.
They have good intentions, but also they have individual wives that they need to focus on. And they can't always be doing this we love you type thing.
Right.
And so it really sets up that, again, not in a mean-spirited, contentious way, but they have some learning and growth to do. It's been 29 years, and they've only ever done everything together, and it's like
and they even say like that we're princesses, like we kind of thought we'd have a better life than this.
Yeah.
You know.
They've got indoor plumbing, so
yeah, right, right. You're doing okay.
Air conditioning. The one they left. Hello.
You can go back to your time if you'd like, yeah. And
if
see how that
like
works.
If you'd like to go poop in a bucket, we can make that happen.
You know, the toilet Princess? Paper and toilet yeah. brushes and yeah. toothbrushes. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
So
how about antibiotics? How about that?
Right. Just penicillin.
Right.
So. I wish I could remember the other actress's name. The gal who plays Mabel.
Oh, Kristen Schaal.
Chris, yes. So we find out that she is Rufus's daughter.
Kelly, yeah.
Yeah. And she kind of tells, she shows up with Bill and Ted and she says, look, she's got to write the song.
I would also like to point out George Carlin's daughter's name is Kelly.
That's nice.
Oh, that's a good call. That's a yeah. nice callback. She says to Bill and Ted, you need to write this song. This you have 7 hours to write this song. Otherwise, the reality is going because you haven't written this song yet. Reality is going to implode on itself. And like throughout the movie, you've got like little flashes of historical or just people from the past or the future popping up in random spots.
Babe Ruth is showing up in George Washington's boat, and George right. Washington is going back to different times, and it everything is all screwed up. The entire universe is collapsing.
And it comes. Bill and Ted have to write this song. Like that's the bottom line.
They have until 7:17 p.m.
Right. So
just real quick, when they take them to the future. And we meet Rufus's daughter. We get a quick Carlin cameo.
Yep. Yep.
And like, I cannot figure out where that audio came from because he's specifically referencing the time machine as a museum artifact. And I'm like, where did they get that from?
I have to think that it's a deleted scene, maybe from the second one, because in the second one, they're at the Bill and Ted Institute.
Right.
So even in the first movie, they're famous for saving the world and they're worshipped. So I would think that maybe Carlin filmed something about the museum or the Institute.
So I would agree with you, but in the second one, he has a ponytail and white hair.
Well, they can do anything with computers. It's the audio.
That's true. That's true.
That part would be easy to fix. But I will also say, you see him step out, and he says he introduces himself, and then when you hear the audio of him talking about the artifact, it cuts away, and you don't see him anymore as that line plays. And so, that's why I was wondering where they got it from, or even if maybe it was a stray line of dialogue from the cartoon, and they snagged it.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I don't think I've ever heard somebody do a Carlin impression. So, I mean, it's.
And
it sounded just
like.
It
didn't sound like an impression.
No, it sounded just like him. So, you're probably right. They've got some track somewhere.
They were doing a watch along on Twitter, and I tried to tweet it, Ed Solomon, who's on Twitter, and I don't think I. Maybe I tagged Alex Winter. I don't know. But I asked because I'm like, that cameo, without spoiling things. Is that original audio, a deleted scene? What is that? And I never got an answer. Maybe they answered it and I didn't see it, but I really tried because I couldn't figure it out. It's great though. Whatever it is, it's a wonderful homage. You see George Carlin in a hologram format, like you would see one of those like Tupac concerts, like a hologram type of performance. And he walks out of the phone booth and he says his lines, and it's really nice. It's a great way where you can see him, you can hear him, he's included. And then from then on, you get Kelly, the daughter, which is, you know, again, a nice homage to the character. So I think they handled it wonderfully, and I
absolutely
wonder how.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they go, and of course, the council, who is different than before, but it's the same premise, tells them that they give them a row of guitars. They're like, get to it. Like, we need this song or else this reality is over with. And Bill and Ted are a little flummoxed. And they realize, which I wish they would have played into the idea that if we just think about it in the, like, we'll just think about writing it in the future. And then all of a sudden it's there. But they don't. They just kind of say, we'll go to the future and we'll, like, take
but
it
I
from
don't
ourselves.
Think you, I, so, not to deal too much with logic in the context of a Bill and Ted movie, because it's not really what they're trying to do, but like, I don't feel like that would work, because you can say in the future I'm going to take this object and place it here,
right?
But you can say in the future I'm going to do something extraordinarily creative, right?
Like,
I can't say 20 years from now I will write something better than Shakespeare. I don't have that ability, and it's never going to happen. So you can't, you know, but I could say 20 years from now I'm going to put this book behind a potted plant.
Okay, that makes sense. So they decide to go to the future, and take it from their future selves. So they, you know, this is where we get a nice callback to the telephone booth, and they jump in and they go about what, 2 years into the future. And we realize that maybe things aren't as good
right.
as they should be. So they go into like, an old folks home, basic. No, it was like a Mexican.
They're like,
bar.
Yeah, they're playing like a little dive bar restaurant. Type
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
It's open mic night. It says open yeah. mic Wild That's Stallions.
Oh, yeah. They said, oh no, they're here. And they run away. And of course you don't see them running away, but then they turn around and, it, I love that every time we see future Bill and Ted, they're getting more and more prosthetics put on.
I thought like, the practical effects were excellent in this movie.
Yes, they were really good.
I was impressed. I wrote in my review that in a comedy movie like this, you don't expect that they have like Oscar winning awards makeup. Like they, you know, you really think they're just going to be silly looking whatever and get the point across. And the makeup is excellent.
Yeah. Especially when they're really old.
Yeah. They did.
Yes. Even the muscle suits.
Yeah. They looked, I'm like, those are pretty detailed.
Yeah.
Yeah. They realize that maybe they don't have the song.
Right. If they're still playing, if they're playing open mics, and that means 2 years in the future, they still don't have the songs.
Right.
They also blame them for, they break the news that the princesses did leave them.
Yes, they did. Though they went on an adventure and then never came back. He's like, so don't, whatever you do, don't let them leave. Be, and then, you know, that becomes a thing later. So then they go. So while all of this is going on, Kelly or the head of the council, the job that was the black dude in the first movie, mm-hmm. first and second movie, yeah. is now a woman,
the great leader,
who turns out to be Rufus's wife and Kelly's mom. She realizes that Bill and Ted have taken off, and she's saying that like sometimes maybe the interpretation of what Bill and Ted have to do is different for everybody else. And she's like, one of the main rules of thought or theories is that Bill and Ted need to die. So she
they say basically we've given them every chance. We've helped them as much as we can, but here we are this much in the future and them being alive doesn't save us.
Right.
Yeah.
So she commissions and she builds like this death robot who is one of the characters from Barry. He's like the main
Anthony Carrigan
guy that Barry interacts with, like the main Russian mobster. He is great.
Yes.
He's in Gotham. He's in all sorts of shows, and yeah. he's fantastic.
Yes. Is his name Reggie? What was his name? The robot?
Oh, Dennis.
Dennis. She's Dennis like, oh, my boy. Playboard. Maggie Kelly's like, oh, my boyfriend's ex-boyfriend's name was Dennis.
Dennis Caleb McCoy.
Yeah.
I like it when they're just like, okay, great. Like,
yeah, we got to go. So while all of this is going on for Bill and Ted, the girl, Kelly comes back to the present, and the girl, the two daughters realize that they have got to help their dads. So they start putting together a super group. And first, who was the one person you would start with? And of course, they pick Hendrix. So they pick Hendrix, and Hendrix is not going for it. So they go back even further and they get the guy who's kind of the inspiration for Jimi Hendrix, Louis Armstrong. So they grab him. I don't know, man. Like, I felt like this was a weird, the Louis Armstrong thing was weird to me.
Why
like
is that?
Just the way the actor was playing. And maybe I don't know what he sounded like or his mannerisms.
That's what he sounded like.
Well, Louis Armstrong's family that runs the Louis Armstrong Foundation or whatever said this actor did a great job and
okay.
they really
well,
enjoyed him in this movie. So
and that's what Louis Armstrong, I mean, he had that kind of a voice and he had that kind of herky jerky movement. And my only thing was, did he sound and move like that at that age? Cause they got a very young Louis
yeah,
Armstrong.
Sure.
And I'm really only familiar with, you know, an older Louis Armstrong. So,
but his kids right. loved the portrayal because they tweeted and they were like, they made Pops look great, or grandkids or whoever they are that runs that foundation. They're like, he did a great job with Pops. And then they knew the band must be a famous jazz band, you know, someone that circle knows, because they were like, it was fun seeing the so-and-sos pop up too as his band. So,
well, that's
yeah.
cool.
Who was the band? Cause it looked like it was the setting looked like the Preservation Hall jazz band, but I don't know.
I can't remember. They didn't mention that, but I can't remember, honestly.
Gotcha.
But it's a real band anyway.
Yeah.
So
they convince Hendrix once they get Armstrong.
Once they bring Louis Armstrong, then they get Hendrix, and then they go back and they get Sebastian Bach?
Mozart.
Okay.
Sebastian Bach is the lead singer of Skid Row.
Yeah, that's not what I meant.
You're thinking Johann Sebastian.
Johann Sebastian Bach is the classical piece.
Not the guy that sings for Skid Row.
Yeah.
And then they go back even further and get like this. I don't know. I don't think this person's real. I guess they could be. But like a woman who is the.
She's real.
Oh, for real?
The next one, yeah. Ling Lun.
Yeah, she's real.
No, the one after that.
Well,
she's like, it's a real thing. It's she's like mythological, but
okay,
it's,
okay,
you know, like it, but it's yeah,
like the, so she,
they didn't make they, it up.
Okay. So they make this super band to help them write this song. And then we cut back to Bill and Ted, and they're just, they're trying,
which they're trying to get a band to help their dads.
Right. And Bill and Ted are trying to write the song or steal the song, I guess.
Yeah. They come up with this genius idea, which to their credit, as Tom said in the other episodes, it's pretty smart though, because if they're doing this in the future, why go? This is kind of my argument, which I don't think too much about those first movies as far as like thinking too hard. But I always think if they can time travel, they can find and do anything. There's really no conflict when you have time travel. So to their credit in this one, which I think is pretty clever writing, they say what the audience is maybe thinking. They're like, just go to the future and get the song. If you've written the song, why do you have to wait to write it? Just go get it.
Just go get it. So then they jump forward about another 5 years, and we see this beautiful house, this massive, you know, massive driveway. And
they're British all of a sudden.
And they're all of a sudden they're British. Bill has like the most audacious wig, like curly wig, and they're speaking in British accents. And they're just like, what are you doing? Like, why are you, why? They're like, oh, we went to, you know, the UK with the princesses, and we vacationed there.
Yeah.
And they... like, we have it. We have the song. And they put on these earphones and they listen to this song and they're like, this is it. And they give them like a mixtape.
And
looks
yeah,
like
well,
a...
that's the joke is, I think there's like giving them what they, Bill and Ted think is like a real album. And what it is one of those thin CD cases
tape.
That you would, you know, print something off your computer.
And it looks like, it looks like it has a Wild Stallions logo
like
on
drawn
it.
On there though.
Yeah,
it looks
right,
like a
right.
CD, it's a CD-R sleeve, right? It's like,
yes, really, exactly.
But they give it to them like, here is the album that we've really, you know, it's so, it's funny because Bill and Ted from our time don't notice it, but it's clearly some cheap thing they've scraped together to give them.
Correct. And then so they're getting ready to leave and everything's great, and they open the door and Dave Grohl is standing at the door.
What are you doing in my house?
Like, yeah. And they're just like, oh no. And they run back, and when they run back in, you can see Bill taking off the wig and he's losing all of his hair, and Ted is taking off his girdle and his guts falling out, and he's, you know, drinking this vodka straight from the bottle. And the good Bill and Ted run back in. They're just like, I cannot believe you tried to give us a song written by Dave Grohl and pass it off as your own. And like, it would have worked. Just go do it.
But this is fantastic because now they have to fight with their future selves, but their future selves know their every move. So their idea is to put buckets on their head so they don't even know what they're going to do.
I do love when Bill goes, oh, they did the one thing I didn't think they were going to do.
I like it when they fall off the balcony. Like, it's again, so ridiculous. But I love these type of movies where you can just be entertained and not think about how.
Just have fun.
Yeah.
Like, you just have fun with it. So
the dad and
the dad
brother
shows
up.
And both Dylan, I think, was the brother's
Deacon.
Name. Deacon. And Ted's dad show up. And I like the dad is not the chief of police. So Bill and Ted leave. And then they jump forward again. Well,
he finally sees them right in the time machine. Because
does he
doesn't believe them this whole time, and then
he never believes.
Isn't
them,
this where don't they escape in the time machine? And he finally
they do
sees?
Escape in the phone booth. Right. That's true, but I don't know if they see them.
I think that's how Ted's dad knows, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. At some point, I forget exactly, but at some point, yeah, he does realize, like, oh my god, they've been telling the truth all this time.
So then they jump up a little bit further, and now they're in jail. And in the trailer, they gave this away, and I saw this little bit, and I thought in the trailer they were doing like death metal, And that was the scene, like, he's like, yeah, we wrote it. What do you think? And Ted's just like, yeah, it's a little dark, but that's okay.
Yeah,
that's,
it must have been a deleted scene. Alex Winter shared online a script, too, that they filmed, and it was different than what we saw. So I'm thinking that they filmed a couple of different versions.
Okay, that makes sense. And then the deal, and then of course, this is a scene where they're wearing like these massive prosthetic, almost like Hans and Franz.
Yeah.
From SNL,
but they're much better though.
Shirts,
they're jacked and huge like that. But they looked
with tattoos, and
it looked very good the way they did it. I think it was a bodysuit, but it almost looked like real people with their heads somehow affixed. Like it looked so realistic. It was like, wow, those really look like real bodies.
No, totally. Jailhouse Bill and Ted are like, no, we're gonna kill you, and then we're gonna go and write this, and you know, point this, you know, give this song out. And of course, Bill and Ted get away. While all of this is going on, they keep bouncing back and forth to the daughters, who, like I said, are just putting. I don't want to say that the daughters don't have like a meaningful story, because they do, but it's just them putting the band together. Like, it's kind, you know, like they're.
Yeah, but the success of the mission, as it were, depends on what they do.
It is. I agree. But it's not like they're doing anything at Bill and Ted's level, like where they're going to.
I don't know. What do Bill and Ted do that's any more important than that? I mean, in the first movie, they gather the band together.
The goofy gags, I guess, right? That Bill and Ted are doing compared to like just gathering people.
I don't know.
I'm not saying it's bad. I think the A
that
and B stories.
The first movie
are,
was literally 90 minutes of them gathering people.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
That's why when we say it combines the best of both, it's like the girls get to go on that adventure that audiences were expecting for the second one. So they gave us the time travel and the historical figures to gather. And then they give us Bill and Ted on their own adventure, which goes to the future. So you get the past, you get the future, and you get them interacting with themselves, which was really fun. And the characters, you could tell that that Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter were having a blast playing these different versions of Bill and Ted. And I think both stories were equally entertaining. And
the dad realizes they're telling the truth when he sees the robot.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
He sees the robot, and the robot accidentally kills Bill's or Ted's dad.
Yeah.
And then so the girls get the band together. They've got everybody ready to go. And then the robot accident like shows up at the house, at Bill and Ted's house, and accidentally kills
the whole group of them. So the historical figures, Kelly's in there, he kills everybody,
right? So Bill and Ted show back up, they've got the song, we should say that Bill and Ted see themselves as old men, and they have this is kind of a really heartwarming moment where they both sit down with their older selves. And their older selves give them like guidance, you know, like the older Ted kind of says, I'm sorry that I never opened up to you the way I should have. And, you know, so they now have a perspective on what they need to do to get their lives together when they get back to the present.
But the USB drive they give them, it says Preston Logan, which is the foreshadowing that clearly, since their first names aren't on there, it's like you can see where the setup's going, but it's nice, you know, when you get there. And that the song's at 717, like we know, and then it also says at MP46. And they're like, what is MP46? At first, I thought it was a joke on MP3, like it's from the future, so it's an MP46. When they first said it, I'm like, what is MP46? And so they're trying to figure out what that means as well.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be a... like how they told time in the future, like they didn't use years anymore.
Oh, that makes sense. So yeah, so they get back to the house, and this is where they run into where Bill and Ted run into the robot.
Dennis Caleb McCoy, thank you.
And he's like, I've made a mistake. I may have killed your entire family. And they're just like, what?
He's going to kill them. And they're like, but we've got the song. And he's like, well, that's what I need to stop from happening. And so he breaks the flash drive, and he's like, you can't kill me because I don't have the song now.
No, it's the other way. It's the other way around. They had it.
Because they had the song, he doesn't need to kill him. So then they break it because if they don't have the song, he has to kill them.
Oh, okay.
So it was kind of like they were doing a little riff on the Isaac Asimov's Rule of Robots, where it's like they send him on a mission that like, to stop them from getting the song. Well, now that they have the song, the mission is pointless and they'll save the world, so everything's okay. And since they want to go rescue the kids, they're like, okay, well, now you don't have a choice. You've got to kill us. I thought that was a clever a clever moment.
It was. And I understood it. I just said it wrong. You know, it's confusing with all the time travel stuff and all that. But yeah, so they're like, well, you've killed our daughters. And since they've been to hell, which is great, if you've seen the second one, you understand more. They don't think like, oh, if you kill us, we're just done
right.
for. They're like, no, you have to kill us. So now we can go to hell
and get them
and,
back.
You know, we'll, yeah, we'll get them
like,
back.
We've done this before. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, we got this. This isn't a problem. Yeah. And that's exactly what they do. We get reintroduced to the Grim Reaper, and he is not happy with Bill and Ted because they had a falling out when they were a band, and Bill and Ted sued them. And Bill and Ted's like, we didn't mean to do it. Like, it wasn't us. It was the lawyers and blah, blah. So they reconcile. They get the whole group back together.
It's really great because the daughters have such an appreciation for music and the careers of their dad. And so even though Bill and Ted had the falling out with the Grim Reaper, the daughters are like, they think he's a legend and they've never met him. So they're like, dads, you hang back. And they go and they convince the Grim Reaper to help them because they are like, you are a legend. You're this great bass player and all this. And it's a really fun moment between the three of them.
And I never noticed how much Gru sounds like the Grim Reaper from Bill and Ted.
That's true.
So then they get brought back and all hell is breaking, like legitimately all hell is breaking loose. The reality is about to fold in on itself.
Can we mention real quick, though, how great it is that Kid Cudi is in this movie playing himself, and he's an expert in quantum physics and time travel?
That.
That's a really, really great gag that we skipped over, and I have to say...
So
like,
I thought that he was Station, because he says Station.
Well, that's probably just... what does that even mean?
Remember, I don't know, like, but he says it, and I was like, is he Station?
No, he's Kid Cudi as Kid Cudi. I don't... Okay. There's no anything listed like that. But I thought that was a great gag, though, that everyone else is playing random people, but he's playing himself, but he's also this genius, and he's explaining what, you know, I can't even quote it, but
no,
when he's explaining time travel, and he's like, oh, and you got to do this with the, you know, whatever, and it's a hilarious role for him to play, totally random and out there.
Yeah, so the Grim Reaper agrees to bring everybody back, and that's what he does. And they
end up on the freeway.
MP46 is where they end up.
Mile marker.
Yes, it's a mile marker. And then Bill looks at the thing, and he's like, Preston and Logan. He's like, oh, and he's looking at some at their daughters, and they realize that the daughters are the ones that create this song with them. Because in the movie... In the very beginning, the leader says your entire band has to be together to make this song.
Mm-hmm.
So once we get the entirety of this band, which includes the moms, includes the princesses, the daughters, Bill and Ted, and this entire like historical band, then things start to fall into place.
And it's still, what's really nice is it still fits the prophecy, even though it's totally retconned, 100% retconned.
Oh, yeah.
It still works because they still did, like, they had the daughters, they went on the adventures, they got this, like, they still, Bill and Ted still did the stuff they had to do, but the other Bill and Ted were the ones that actually do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's the best of both worlds, and it's a really nice, sweet way to bring them all together and still fit within everything you've known, so you're not like, oh, this just ruined the first two movies. It plays...
That's the advantage of having a screenwriter that does all three movies, right? Like, they're so faithful to both movies,
mm-hmm.
and the second one did not review well because it's very different from the first one, but there are elements that they're faithful to in this one,
mm-hmm.
which I think is fantastic.
Because the fans love them both. Critics aside and box office aside, people love both these movies. And so they do a great tribute to both of them in this one. And I think it's a movie that fans will be completely happy with.
And speaking of box office real quick, I feel like we should point out that even though the second one, you know, probably underperformed, it made essentially the same amount of money as the first one. The second one opened against Terminator 2. So
well, okay, come on.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
that's very unfortunate.
And
that's
the same demo, right? In 19
yeah. absolutely.
In 1991, that's the same group of people.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's too bad. So anyway, how great is it that parked on the traffic jam on the freeway is a Guitar Center truck and a tractor trailer flatbed
and a Circle K.
That they make us. Yeah, it's
right. It's perfect.
So funny the way they do that. So. again, because you don't have to think too hard about these movies. All the stuff they need is there. They get these instruments, they get the stage, but then they remember, but wait a minute, we're supposed to unite the entire world and play together. How do we do that? For, you know, we can't get everyone to play at the same time. And they're like, oh, time travel.
Time travel.
We can go.
Which also creates almost a Groundhog Day time loop. Where, like, how long did it actually take them to give all of the, like, in their time?
But they were also like, it doesn't have to be us. It could be our other, like, multi-dimensional versions of us, right? Like,
when they was like, oh, God, they're going to do a multiverse of Bill and Ted. Right? Don't get me wrong. I'm in. Let's do it. But
again, what did they do in this situation? They deus ex machina'd, just like they did with the other ones. It's like, how are we going to get out of this situation? Oh, time travel. It's the ultimate deus ex machina. So they go into 7 billion people in the world to give everybody an instrument and then show back up at the performance.
And everybody plays and the reality sets itself right. And again,
and it's an awesome song.
It's not a bad song. So here's my other.
But I mean, I was really happy with it.
The only complaint I ever have about Bill and Ted, and it's a stupid one, but it's like I want them to play hair metal. I want them to play like hard, you know, hair metal, and we never get that. Right? Like even at the end of.
But they never had played hard hair metal. Like, I mean,
if your name is Wild Stallion with Y's.
Yeah, but like if you look at the soundtrack of that those movies, first off, most of the bands went on to be nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, but that first soundtrack features Extreme and Before They Were Anything and Glenn Burtnick, who Glenn Burtnick would go on to replace Tommy Shaw and Styx for an album and a band called Power Tool, which is actually Nelson. They didn't have the name Nelson yet, but it's Matthew and Gunnar Nelson singing a song written by Frank and Dweezil Zappa. So like, I mean, for all their kind of claims of loving like hard rock, there's really not a lot of hard rock. Like even, you know, in the first one,
the second one, right? They've got Pantera.
They get Pantera and Megadeth on the second Primus one. That's fair, but
and Faith No More.
Yeah, but the evolution of their music really was never all that hard. And plus, if you're going to write this huge mainstream song that unites the world, it ain't going to be heavy metal.
No, that's true. That's true. In this one, when they add like EDM and, you know, they're playing on like a beatbox, I was like, I get that. Like those two girls, that would be there.
And it's Kid Cudi. I mean,
right. That makes total
sense. Kid Cudi's there. And obviously he's a rapper and makes great beats and everything. I love Kid Cudi's music. So I think the song is great. You've been waiting all this time, been waiting 31 years to hear what the song is that will reunite the world. And it's different than you expected. And there's more people involved and different people. But I was really happy with the song they came up with. And again, the moment, like any downfalls that this movie had were erased by that ending scene. It's such a feel-good scene.
I don't even think there are any downfalls. I think this is exactly what they wanted to make. And if you love Bill and Ted, and how can you not love that first one? Like, what kind of, you're a sociopath if you don't like that first movie. Like, it's the exact same thing.
Like, if you don't like Bill and Ted, nothing about Face the Music is going to change your opinion.
Absolutely
but,
not.
But if you like Bill and Ted, this is exactly the movie you wanted.
Yeah.
It's perfect for what it's trying to be, but it's not a perfect movie. My point is that some of the jokes are flat. Some of the pacing is off. Like, it's not a perfect movie, but it's extremely enjoyable, and it's exactly what fans want. And again, by the end of the movie, I just forgot any moments that fell flat or anything because it was such a joyful ending. Feel good, like they know how to do in all these movies. The song was good. There's the family element. Everybody's happy and back together. And
there's some legit laugh out loud moments in this movie.
Totally.
I mean, I laughed a lot at this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was where I was debating if I was going to rent it or buy it. And I was like, why? I'm buying it.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know,
for the extra $5.
Extra $5. Yeah, I'll buy it.
So,
but yeah, I think that's a perfect way to put it though. If you like the other movies, you'll love this. If you don't like the other movies, there's nothing about this that will turn you into a fan of Bill and Ted. This is exactly for the fans, by the people that made the original movie, and it does right by them, and you'll love it if you love those.
It makes me want to go back and watch Point Break.
Well, you can like, always. I mean, it's a great movie. You can always go back and watch it. It's one of those things.
I was like, oh yeah, I love that. That Keanu.
Speed and Point Break, that early Keanu. It's if you watch interviews.
Dracula. Don't watch Dracula.
Oh, no. But if you watch interviews with Keanu, Keanu was Ted. Like it's,
oh, absolutely.
It wasn't a stretch for him to play that character.
Yeah.
And he's only now evolved to the Keanu we know. It's funny how he, like Tom said, tried to get away from Ted because he didn't want to be typecast. And
when did that happen? When is this? Is the Matrix the switch?
No, I mean, he was always doing stuff like that, right? Like, it's not too long after the second Bill and Ted that he's in, like, My Private Idaho with River Phoenix.
So, it's weird. I think that's the... you know what? That's the switch. I think if River Phoenix doesn't die, maybe it takes longer to get to this version of Keanu, but I feel like...
River Phoenix auditioned for Bill and Ted.
Yeah, I think River Phoenix passing away was a pretty big blow... they were best friends. He was a pretty big blow to Keanu, and he started doing some different stuff after River Phoenix died.
But yeah, like this was a movie that when I heard they were making it, I was just kind of like, ugh, like that ship has sailed. You know what I mean?
Kinda,
like,
yeah.
And so for them to give us such a good movie that really just fits
no
the tone
business.
Of the original. Yeah, like this is one of those situations where this movie had no right to be this good. Like, and hat tip to them for
absolutely.
Pulling it off.
It's at 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics really gave it good reviews, which is...
Yeah, I know when I reviewed it on the radio on Friday, Max Foisy, who's been on the show a time or two, is also on that show, but not doing the movie reviews on that particular show. And I could hear the face he was making when I gave this movie a positive review. Like, he was just not anticipating me to have enjoyed this movie on the level I did.
Oh, so you're saying it was a surprise face, not a grimace.
Yeah, like he was just like, it was like a double take. Like, what? Like, he hasn't seen it yet either. And because he was just like, so when my review was like, this movie is delightful and they could not have done a better job on this movie. And I could tell that that was not the answer he was expecting to hear from me. So
that's fun.
And that's out of 133 critics. It's a 79% of Rotten Tomatoes. Average of 6.6 out of 3. I mean, I think
that
about a 7 out of 10 is about right for this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I mean that as a compliment, especially because it's so goofy, you're just going to lose a certain portion of the film reviewers because it's just so silly, you know?
Right.
And, you know, and they're joyless hacks and they can have it. So
I think also we lost somebody this week in kind of a shocking
fashion. True.
You know, I feel like we should kind of touch on the fact that we lost Chadwick Boseman, who was a shock to everyone.
Yeah.
That he was going through as much as he was going through.
And he'd been taking a ration of crap online for his appearance.
Man, I got to tell you, though, when those pictures came out, I was like, oh, wow. Like,
yeah.
I hope he's okay. Like, hopefully this isn't one of those tragic stories. And unfortunately, it turned out to be one of those tragic stories, but for a completely different reason.
Yeah.
The fact that he filmed all of those Black Panther movies and scenes... in the condition he was in, I can't even imagine.
He found
out. I
can't
even imagine.
4 years ago, he had stage 3 colon cancer. And so for 4 years, all those movies that he's done, I think he's done like 10 or 12 movies since then, and promoted them and continued to visit children's hospitals and stay with people with cancer. And it escalated to stage 4 and he passed away. And he really kept that quiet and didn't want to lose out on any roles or anything. And
he didn't. I mean, we just talked about him, what, 3 months ago?
The Five Bloods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a shame and it sucks. And I hope that they don't. I hope they go with Shuri in the Black Panther movies. I hope they don't recast.
I don't think you'll see it recast. I think you'll see the mantle pass.
Yeah.
Which makes the most sense. And it kind of felt like they were setting up for that anyway.
I think you're right.
But not that they were looking to rush him out the door or anything, but that's kind of,
you got to prepare. I mean, that's,
yeah, they're always prepared for contract negotiations that fall apart or whatnot. So, but I agree and don't think that they will attempt to recast it. Yeah. I think that you will see someone else become Black Panther, but it won't be the same character.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So I just, you know, just want to feel like that's Chadwick Boseman has been a part of this podcast for the last 4 years. So, and that was a gut punch.
I remember when I saw the thing, I sent it to Kevin, and I was just like, is this true? I didn't want to share it and be wrong. I was just like, this doesn't seem right. Like, it was, very surprising.
He's only 43, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, to give you an impression of how shocking it was, I mean, it was the only thing on anyone's timeline for all the social media for days. I haven't been on today, but the last 2 days, that's all anyone's been talking about. And the tweet sent out from his account by his family that talks about him and what he was going through and all that is the most liked tweet in the history of Twitter. So if that shows you the impact that Chadwick Boseman had on pop culture and on society this day and age, his passing, the tweet announcement is the most liked. And, you know, of course, we don't mean, it's not like people like him dying, but that's people remembering
showing
him.
Showing support.
Exactly. Right. And so in the most liked in the matter of one day.
Yeah.
So that's the impact he had. And it's interesting because you've got some people out there saying these Marvel movies are kids' movies and what do they matter and whatever. And look how the entire world responded to the death of one of their actors.
That's a very important, but very important movie.
It just shows you how impactful that you can try to, if you're trying to be a film snob, you can try to dismiss these MCU movies as much as you want. But the entire world came together and mourned his loss. And of course, he was an actor that goes far beyond the MCU. But that is how he will be remembered. It's his most iconic role. And look at the impact that had on people like no other.
Well, and he also, we should say, played, you know, it three other Black icons, mm-hmm. that those three being real human beings, but I mean, he played Jackie Robinson, he played James Brown, and he played Thurgood Marshall, and those are also three very, very different people.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he could play all three of them in a span of, you know, 5-6 years is very impressive. And I saw a story about him when he was first starting out. He was cast, I think it might have even been his first real role. He was cast on a soap opera, The Guiding Light, I believe it was.
All My Children.
Is that what it was? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters on the show was adopting a kid who was a Black gang member, and I think he filmed it for like a week, and he was just like, no, like, this needs to be a different type of character. I'm not going to do it. And he walked away. And when he did not have the juice to walk away from a role like that, he walked away. And
who got that role?
Michael B. Jordan got that role, and never knew it until they were in Black Panther together. They were talking about the story, and Michael B. Jordan had no idea. And the character that they gave to Michael B. Jordan, they recast it, was different. And he's like, the character I played was different than that, and it was because, even though they let him walk away from that role, they still were like, maybe we should tweak this some.
Wow.
And that says a lot about his character and commitment, that he was, I mean, to walk away from a role on a big TV show like that when you don't have the pedigree yet.
To do that yet, right.
It's pretty ballsy.
It just shows his morals and his commitment that he didn't want to play a stereotypical role. He's like, I'm not going to be known for that and typecast for that or perpetrate that. It wasn't his thing. I mean, he was an amazing person, amazing actor. His presence was felt in everything that he did. Even that movie Gods of Egypt, which was terrible, he was good.
It was pretty bad.
he was phenomenal, and he will be greatly missed.
Yeah, it's a big loss. So,
well, I guess on that note, that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find
them. This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, check out our Patreon, Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So, that's it for this one. Coming up next week, I guess we will tackle Mulan, right? So
let's get down to business.
Look forward to that. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Adam Jr. shoots Lou.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.